This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit Progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
One of the few guys, I can't think of any others, frankly, who have been dominant college coaches and dominant NFL coaches. And there's just not many on the planet. And two-time Super Bowl winner, national titles in Miami, now with Fox, Jimmy Johnson via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. You know, it is interesting, Jimmy, why college coaches don't work in the NFL, and some NFL coaches don't work in college. Is there a theory you have behind it? Why, for instance, some of those NFL guys you think would succeed at college, like Al Groh, they haven't? Well, what is it?
Colin, I think the number one thing is that it is a completely different job. You know, people say that you're the head coach, and so it ought to be the same, X's and O's football, but it's not. You know, in college, it's so important that you recruit well. You've got to know your personnel, and I think that's one of the downfalls of Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame. You know, so many of the coaches at Notre Dame go in there, and because it's Notre Dame, you're going to get great players. But I think it's important that they go out there and recruit well, and they got to make sure that they do the right kind of recruiting. So in any college, making a difference what university you're at, you got to be an outstanding recruiter. And then in pro football, you got to have the right personnel, but then it's the X's and O's. It's a completely different job. The one thing that I did is in college, you know, I was my own recruiting coordinator. And so then for about 5 years there, I went and visited all these pro camps and watched the pro coaches and seeing how they operated. So I prepared myself to go into professional football. And then when I got to the Dallas Cowboys, I knew my strength was personnel. And so I ended up traveling around the country looking at players. And so I did all the drafting and building the team. And so in essence, I was my own personnel director. And so that's one reason I was able to make the transition.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. You know, people forget this at the college level, Jimmy. You only have like 17, 20 hours. You know, they'd be kicking Belichick out of practice, you know.
Right. And the other thing too, in college football, you've got a yearly turnover of players. You continually have to get these young freshmen ready to play, and so you got to have your system such that they can come in and from all different backgrounds, you know, learn a little bit of football in a hurry and be able to perform without making mistakes. In professional football, you got older, more mature players. You don't have to really play rookies that much, and so you got a year or two to get them ready. And you're liable to have some veterans that are going to be with you 8, 9, 10 years. And so it's not quite as important to get them ready in a hurry and play them at a young age. And again, you're just dealing with different players. And the college players have so many more problems. You're in essence a counselor. You got to have a lot more one-on-one communication with them. You got to handle problems that have nothing to do with football. Just to make sure that they're operating and performing at a high level and they don't have all these other distractions. And, you know, pro football, you got to make sure, you know, that they're performing, that they're healthy. And it's a different world.
Yeah, no, and you were a star in both. Two-time Super Bowl champ, former Cowboy head coach Jimmy Johnson, now with Fox Sports. You know, it's interesting with the Cowboys. I've been saying this, Jimmy. Offensively, I think they have a lot of good players. I don't know if they have a lot of great players. I think they're, you know, I like a lot of them. I don't love a lot of them. Last 2 weeks, they can't score. Is it a player issue? Is it a coaching issue? What's going on in Dallas?
I think it's really a combination of both. You know, they were a lot more wide open early in the season, and they were getting a lot of big plays. But they were also turning the ball over, and they weren't as consistent. I think a couple things have happened. You know, right now, their wide receivers are not producing. And, you know, Roy Williams, Creighton, Miles Austin, you know, they've got to make some big plays because teams are taking Jason Witten out of the game. They know that Jason Witten is Tony Romo's security blanket.
Yeah.
So they're concentrating on him. Well, that's isolating all those wide receivers, and the wide receivers haven't performed. Now, the coaching issue, they have pulled back a little bit to protect the football, to keep Tony Romo from turning it over. And then the other thing that's happened, you know, they played the Redskins, and the Redskins play pretty good defense. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how they play against the Raiders Thanksgiving. And then the big game is going to be a week from Sunday when they go up to the Giants Stadium and they play the Giants. When they go up there, I think the winner of that game is going to take control of the NFC East, and we'll see if they can make some big plays. But, you know, points come out of the passing game, and right now the passing game for the Cowboys, the wide receivers, haven't been producing.
By the way, Jimmy is part of the Crown Royal Safe Rides Home program, which provides free and safe rides home to Dallas adults 21 and over on Thanksgiving Eve, one of the most celebrated nights out of the year in that area and in the country, by the way. I want to ask you this. Bill Belichick against the Jets. And I'm not going to ask you about the fourth down because you've probably been asked that 100 times. Against the Jets, Jimmy, game was over, and he goes for the end zone, and it's a blowout game, and it's not my favorite thing he's ever done. You were a guy that, you know, you always said, you know, your team's your problem, my team's my problem.
Right.
Is Belichick crossing a line? Is there a line within coaches of class and dignity when you're pouring it on? What do I make of that?
You know, I really never bought into it too much, and let me just say this: I had my share of some bad teams when I was at Oklahoma State in my first year with the Cowboys, and so, you know, I had some times where the opponent probably put a lot of points on me, but I never really thought about that because I always felt like that was my responsibility to keep them from putting points on me. And the other thing is, you can only be concerned about your players. Now, your players want to score. Your players want to have touchdowns. You know, you don't have a running back that wants to take a knee. You don't want to have a quarterback that wants to take the air out of the ball and not throw it. And so, and all these players, you know, they've got incentives in their contracts. They make money, if they score so many touchdowns, or if they throw for so many completions, and all the good things. There's incentives in their contracts. I've had players get mad at me, you know, when I, you know, didn't let them perform because that was taking money out of their pocket and their incentives in their contracts. So again, to keep my players happy, you know, it was always important for me to let them perform. Now, I didn't want to sacrifice the good of the team, because if we had a big lead, I'd put some backups in there a little bit and let them play. But I never wanted to pull back the reins on my football team.
Yeah, no, I get that argument. Two-time Super Bowl champ, former Cowboy coach, now with Fox Sports, does a great job. Before we let you go, having been in Miami, and I think you still live there, down there in the state of Florida.
Right.
You know, Ricky Williams is just one of the strangest stories ever. They couldn't wait for him to get out of town. Now he's back. He's changed his legacy. Did you ever coach a guy? Ricky Williams, one of the strangest guys and one of the strangest stories in the history of the NFL. What do you make of his personality? What would he be like to coach?
You know, I've talked to Ricky a couple of times, and he is a unique individual. He has his own way about things. Obviously he fashions himself as an individualist and going to do it his way. But he is a tremendous athlete. He's a tremendous player. He tries to keep his body in tremendous shape. And then plus he had a couple of years that he didn't really beat up on his body much.
That's right.
And so, he's performing at a high level. I'm really surprised that he's playing as well as he's playing, right now. But, like you say, he is a very unique individual.
I don't think I'd want to build my football team around him, but I think I maybe like him on the roster.
Oh, without question. I'd want him on my football team, but, you know, he's not going to be a leader for you. And in fact, you don't want a lot of your players listening to him. you don't want the rest of your team. You don't want them to fashion themselves after him. But you would like to have him on your team.
Yeah. Jimmy, a real pleasure. Safe Rides Home, Crown Royal, Safe Rides Home in Dallas. Free rides 21 and over on Thanksgiving Eve. One of the most celebrated nights of the year. A great broadcaster. And a remarkable
coach. I think you're right. And the Safe Rides Home program here in Dallas is one thing. I think the main thing that Crown Royal wants to get out nationally is for everybody partying during the holidays to have a designated driver. You know, make sure you have a plan before you go out. Let's make sure it's a safe holidays.
Hey, really appreciate you, Jimmy, stopping by the show.
Okay, enjoyed it.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
Joe Mauer wins the American League Most Valuable Player Award. That comes as no surprise. He won it going away. Is Buster there? Let's lose the music. We got Buster on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. We'll bring in Buster Olney, who was outraged yesterday. I ran into Buster Olney in the hallway yesterday here at ESPN, and the announcement had been made that Mauer had won the award and gotten 27 of 28 first-place votes. And so I said to Buster, what happened here? And Buster explained it to me yesterday, why it was so ridiculous that Miguel Cabrera should get a first-place vote. So rather than me tell the story, let's have Buster tell the story on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Buster, remind everyone what happened the last weekend of the season.
Well, what happened last weekend of the season is that as the Twins, Joe Mauer's Twins, ran down Miguel Cabrera's Tigers on the last Saturday in the regular season, Miguel Cabrera had a domestic incident at 6 o'clock in the morning, registered a .26 blood alcohol level, and had to be taken out away from the police department by his general manager, and they wind up losing, blowing a big lead in the American League Central. And beyond that, every single major statistical number other than RBI, Joe Mauer has a huge advantage. Yeah, by the way, he's also a Gold Glover, while Cabrera's basically a subpar first baseman. It makes no sense, and I always feel like when we have votes like this, that it just makes all of us writers look stupid. Like, we don't have some consensus of thought.
I'm still trying to figure out the reasoning for doing it, of why this one writer, and I don't want to
mispronounce his name.
Yeah.
Do you know him, Buster? Is it Kizo or Keizo? It's Keizo something.
Kanishi?
Keizo Kanishi of the Kyoto News, who's a member of the Seattle chapter of the Baseball Writers Association of America. I assume a lot of Japanese writers follow Ichiro.
Right.
And so they are covering Major League Baseball, and they're voting, and that's fine. But has anyone had a chance to ask him his rationale for voting for Cabrera?
I did not reach out to him. I know Tyler Kepner of the New York Times emailed him and asked him, and he did not get a response. In the story that I read this morning, it's just incomprehensible. It makes, you know, it kind of made me pause yesterday when I was asked the question in doing some shows, you know, is Albert Pujols going to be unanimous selection? And of course you'd say, well, yeah, he led the league in homers, he led the league in runs, he led the league in every major statistic, basically. But it takes is one, one person, one writer popping up and doing things like this. It just makes you scratch your head.
Mike and Mike Buster Olney. He was irate yesterday.
Yes, he was. I know.
And Robert in the hallway. And as further evidence of Joe Mauer's statistical season that was, almost without peer in recent memory, here are the last four AL MVP winners who hit .365 or better with 25 or more home runs and 90 RBIs in the season. You ready for these names? Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, and add to that list, Joe Mauer.
Wow.
That's the kind of year this guy had, and if he hadn't missed the first month of the season with an injury, who knows what his RBI numbers would have been. Certainly they'd have been over 100 for the season, and he played a Gold Glove catcher for a team that he pretty much single-handedly put on his shoulders and led to the playoffs with a low payroll. It is the dictionary definition, Buster, of an MVP season.
Well, and as we said, and he led that team, his team, over Miguel Cabrera's team, and those numbers that he had, you know, batting average, .365, on base percentage, .444, slugging percentage, .587. Those all led the American League. He's the first American League player to lead in those all three of those categories since George Brett in 1980. And that's why yesterday when this came in, you know, I heard that, you know, Mauer had gotten all but one vote, and you're thinking, okay, you could see one writer checking in with, well, we're going to give Mark Teixeira, Derek Jeter a first-place vote because their team won the most games in the American League. I would have strongly disagreed, but you could get your brain around it. This one I can't. And, beyond the numbers, that incident the last weekend of the season was just so defining, I think, for the Tigers and the way that their season fell apart in the last 5 days.
It will be interesting to hear that writer's explanation for Cabrera being first on his ballot. Going past that a bit, Joe Mauer, do you think at the end of it all he takes what would be some kind of a discount in Minnesota because he wouldn't get the amount of money he could get at one of the big-paying teams and stays a Minnesota Twin?
I do think so. Now, this negotiation will probably play out all during this offseason, and, you know, in the end, I think Joe will have to make a decision to take less money than we know he would get if he were to sign with the New York Yankees next winter or the Boston Red Sox. But keep in mind the wild card in this situation. His agent is Ron Shapiro, who represented Kirby Puckett who stayed his entire career with the Minnesota Twins. He represented Cal Ripken, who stayed his entire career with the Baltimore Orioles. And, you know, Ron has gotten record-setting deals for his clients, but it's clear that money is not going to be the only factor, you know, as Joe Mauer negotiates this thing. He's a hometown guy, and, you know, he stated in the past his goal is to win a World Series with the Minnesota Twins.
Ron Shapiro, isn't that Mark Shapiro's father, right?
That's exactly right.
Mark Shapiro is the GM of the Cleveland Indians, and for absolutely irrelevant of anything, he is also the father of Julie Mangini, who is married to Eric Mangini.
Wow,
You got some stuff going there, Greeny.
6 degrees of absolutely nothing.
How about
all right, Buster, you're the best. Thanks for jumping in.
See you guys.
I was just talking with Teddy Bruschi before we went on the air about how the New England Patriots, a team he played for, almost always makes the play. Nobody in the NFL last 3 years never makes the play like the Houston Texans.
Right.
You watched that game last night, Teddy. They got a ton of talent.
Just a what-ifs, you know, a what-if game. I mean, what if the field goes in? What if they go to overtime and get the ball first? Do they win the game? I mean, they got the skilled players everywhere, the quarterback, the receivers. I know they're hurting missing the Owen Daniels, the skilled tight end. But defensively, add Cushing along with Ryans and Mario Williams, and you've got names and skill everywhere. You know, you think they'd be doing a lot better than they are. So do you look at them as underachievers?
I kind of do. Yeah, I mean, I think mostly, Teddy, in the NFL, people achieve what they should. I think Houston underachieves. I think for years, Arizona underachieved. Like, I think people are sleeping on Arizona. I think Minnesota underachieved, but a lot of it was they didn't have the right leader. How surprised are you, for the record, by Brett Favre? I mean, it's amazing.
I'm shocked, especially the way last year went for him at times when he was with the Jets and how he ended the season, and you figure, okay, he needs an off-season surgery, so he's going to retire. So is he just coming back just to sort of, you know, prove a point that he can play again? And okay, maybe he's just trying to help a team out, but to play, I mean, I think he has over 20 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. I mean, the guy is just playing out of his mind. I mean, MVP? Possible? Sure. I mean, he needs to be in the conversation. I mean, how good was Minnesota last year to this year? I think he's made that much of a difference. So I think he's playing great, that team has rallied around him. And you see the way he is with his teammates, too. I think that's the beauty of having Brett Favre on your team. Really, he's the quarterback. He's a leader. He makes the big plays. But he makes playing football fun to be around him.
Well, and talk about that with Brady. Is how much is skill? How much is talent? How much is schematics? And how much is it? The personality stuff.
The personality, you can need, there are a couple type of personalities you can have, just sort of that leader on the field where guys know you have that sense in the huddle, and you look at your offensive linemen and your players in the offensive huddle, and you have that confidence. You sort of emit that confidence, we're going to get this done. And then there's also that leader in the locker room where, you know, you make things fun, you keep things light, you really have the pulse of the team. And I think Favre sort of has more than Brady, more than Manning, he has sort of both of those aspects in terms of making it fun in the locker room, keeping it light everywhere on the sideline, and keeping people just having fun to play football, and then going out there and getting your job done when the time comes.
You know, it's interesting. There was a moment this week, and, you know, Bill Belichick is such a lightning rod for discussion, pro or con.
Right.
He's obviously brilliant, and then he does things like against New York this weekend. I asked Jimmy Johnson about this earlier, that, you know, they're leading by 17, and he goes deep into the end zone late. Where do you fall on that? What am I supposed to think of that?
Right.
Or does it not matter what I think?
Yeah, fourth quarter, 25 seconds left. You're up by a couple scores, and you're still trying to hit Moss down the field. And if you look at the history of Coach Belichick, he's going to play the game until it's finished. And I think everyone knows that you got to play the Patriots for 4 quarters because they're going to try to get things done the way they want them to be done. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. Now, I think the other way you can look at that is how much of a game within the game the Revis-Moss matchup is becoming, and how much of a rivalry of a receiver versus cornerback that is becoming. That did Revis possibly have his moments during that game against Moss? I think he did, but then Moss gets 5 catches, has a touchdown on him, so it's a rivalry, and they want to play that out to the very end. So let's see if we can get one more on Revis and sort of get the exclamation point that we won this rivalry within the rivalry.
Did Bill even, do you think, address it the next day about that play? Because, you know, the media talks about stuff he may not, but do you think Bill maybe addresses it?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
No, he moves on better than any coach in the NFL, and that's the game. That's the way it went, and that's the way he saw it. So, I don't think he focuses on anything like that, but I think there is. You got to look at it as Moss versus Revis, and Brady and Moss, how much that rivalry, that matchup meant to them, and maybe the offensive coaches that we feel like we've got the better receiver, and let's give it one more shot right here.
Yeah, Teddy Bruschi joining us, multiple Super Bowl winner. It's The Herd on ESPN Radio. I've said it before. We pay quarterbacks so much money now. It just eats up your salary cap. And because of that, I have to totally believe in you. I have to believe in your off the field, on the field. I can roll the dice on a linebacker. But when it comes to quarterback, you're my CEO. I'm spending a fortune on you. And Vince Young can win games, but I'm not building my franchise around Vince Young. I'll build it around Drew Brees, Donovan McNabb. You, on the other hand, are ready to literally sign the biggest check in the league to Vince.
Why not? I mean, he's not going to have 300-yard passing games. If you're in love with numbers, you're not going to be in love with Vince Young. But he's going to keep you in ball games. Now, when the Titans, I think Jeff Fisher's done a spectacular job this year of coaching. Now, if he keeps winning, and maybe, he comes out and squeaks out a winning season, in my mind, he's got to be considered up there in the conversation with Coach of the Year. He gave Kerry Collins, his seasoned veteran, time. He gave him training camp. You're my starter, 6 games to see what he can do. A lot of other coaches, they yank guys right away. 2-3 losses, you're yanked. Fisher gave him time. 6 games, in comes Vince Young. Okay, now it's your team. After that bye week, he puts on a little Peyton Manning jersey, lightens up the load a little bit on his team. In comes Vince Young. Now, Vince Young does a great job of sort of taking that team with him and say, guys, we need to just get back at having fun, okay? His mentality last night, his intensity of picking up a first down on third, picking up a first down on a third and long with a scramble, or making the throw when he had to. He isn't your conventional quarterback, but I think he can still get it done in this league.
So you would make him your guy. I think, listen, I've said it before. He's an NFL athlete. He works. I mean, he wins games. Big picture, though, in this league, you got to pay him $1 zillion.
No, okay. If I had a choice, Vince Young and some of these other quarterbacks, sure. I think I would rather prefer a Tom Brady or a Drew Brees. But if I'm on a team and I have Vince Young as my quarterback, I also see the way he gets things done. It's different. It's different than the other guys. So you have to see differently on how you win games differently, and how your offensive coordinator must understand that. Now, this offense has to be different also. And Mike Heimerdinger's done a great job. I mean, he's running speed option. He's running option. He's running quarterback draws. That's who you have at quarterback. So that's who you have to be as an offensive team. He's going to throw for 150, 200 yards a game. If he takes care of the ball and does those things he can do with his athletic ability, it's going to be exciting to watch, for one. And, yes, I think he can win football games.
Well, you know what's interesting, Teddy, is much like the Wildcat, because Vince Young's the only quarterback in the league that plays that way, here's the one advantage. It's what I always said about Air Force football. Nobody runs that offense. How do you simulate it in practice? I mean, the Patriots, the Steelers, how many guys that do that? So when you do run the Wildcat, it wastes practice time. When you do face Vince Young, what are you going to have Brady run the option in practice?
Right, and then it's like you get to the game and the speed is so much different. The speed is so much faster, and you see sort of when that option comes at you, you don't recognize it right away, because this is the NFL now. This isn't college where you see that from a week-to-week basis and you prepare for it. You find yourself in between the quarterback and the pitch. Who do I defend? But then you get to the sideline and make those adjustments, but all of a sudden they're back to playing traditional sets. So the way that you sprinkle that in is key, and I think Heimerdinger's done a great job of that.
Okay, I said this yesterday. It just feels like to me, and it's pretty, and I think most of the emails I got, it feels like I sort of know who's going to win the NFC. It's going to be the Vikings or the Saints or Arizona. They all play at home. It's not like you have one of these good warm weather teams having to go to New York. I just don't think a New York or a Philadelphia can go into a dome against a better quarterback. The AFC, I have no idea. You could sell me on anything. I kind of feel like I know what I'm going to see. I'm going to see Vikings Saints NFC Championship.
Two dome teams also. And also, what's the thing people have always said versus dome teams in the past? Well, once you get them in the playoffs in December and January, and it's the bad weather, you get them outside, that's when you get them.
Right.
But whoever gets the home field advantage, the second seed is probably also going to be a dome team.
Bingo.
So it's going to be a dome battle. You know, so those teams really have Minnesota and New Orleans have the fast track on who gets home field advantage, and also it's still going to be the same elements, just the difference is going to be crowd noise.
Yeah, it's I'm sorry, but you know, it's easy to dismiss the Saints because of their history. When you play 10 games and 7 or 8 are blowouts, I mean, I'm sorry, but you can't dismiss 10-0 in the NFL.
You can't, not at all. This is the NFL, and there were you know, teams in early on in the year that you might have said this is a guaranteed victory. But as you see the season going along, you see the teams that were bad in the beginning getting better as the year comes along. So, and the Saints being a 10-0 team, you don't dismiss that at all, because that's legit. Now you're getting in a double digit being undefeated. And now the conversation comes is can they go all the way? And it sets up a huge game versus the Patriots on Monday night.
First, though, I want to turn it over to Tristan Cockcroft, our fantasy expert. Well, the week that was in terms of fantasy running backs in Week 11. Tristan?
Thanks, Mike. Well, Week 11 is in the books, and I'm going to declare it the week of the fill-in running back, and here's why. Let's take a look at a few of the names. Ricky Williams is the first standout. 30 fantasy points, tops among running backs, and that's thanks to 138 yards and 3 touchdowns. Well, Ronnie Brown's out for the season with a Lisfranc fracture in his foot. That really helps Williams. He's going to step up, and it didn't look like he needed to have that two-man backfield to succeed. He's got Buffalo next. They are allowing the most fantasy points per game to opposing running backs. I think he's stepping up for that matchup. He also has Jacksonville and Tennessee ahead, which also plays in his favor. Jason Snelling had 76 yards and 2 touchdowns against the Giants. That's not the easiest of matchups. An impressive outing by Snelling. And here are the good numbers for him. 4 carries in goal-to-go situations in relief of Michael Turner, who was injured in Week 10, and 6 more this week. Now, in those 10 carries he's had, he has 3 touchdowns. I wouldn't be surprised if even after Turner comes back, Snelling gets a little bit of goal line work. And the matchup is great this week. In Week 12, it's Tampa Bay. They've allowed 74 fantasy points combined to opposing running backs. Justin Forsett, now he had 9 yards on 9 carries. Not very impressive, but consider it was against Minnesota. Against the Williams wall, we'll give him a break. He got a goal line carry, and he scored with it. He's also the team's leader in receptions and targets, and he gets St. Louis in Week 12. If he's a starter, he's going to be a great fantasy play. The other valuable fantasy fill-ins of the week, Bernard Scott, 14 fantasy points. He gets Cleveland if he gets another start in Week 12. LeSean McCoy, 13 fantasy points. That's his third double-digit performance in his past 4. Very impressive. Now let's take a look at some of the pickups leading into Week 12. And the first one is Rock Cartwright, the guy with the name that goes back to that Seinfeld episode. Always love the name Cartwright, and he's going to be a popular fantasy pickup because Liddell Betts has a torn MCL and an ACL. He's on season-ending IR. Clinton Portis also has already been ruled out for Week 12, and he's having lingering vision problems. This might be a pretty serious thing that keeps him out most of the rest of the year. Cartwright had 140 yards on 20 touches this past week, and he gets the Saints and the Raiders in the next couple of weeks. So, you know, he might be a flex play for you, even though he's not as impressive a talent as the two men ahead of him. Robert Meacham. I keep mentioning this guy, but he's owned in only 12.9% of ESPN leagues. I'm waiting for people to catch on. He has touchdowns in his past 3 weeks, and he had the same number of targets as Devery Henderson during that span. That's a pretty impressive thing, because Meacham's getting a lot of those in red zone situations. He's a guy, if you plug in the back of your lineup, might really surprise you. Kevin Boss, touchdowns in each of his past 3 games. He had 6 touchdowns in 2008, and 5 of them came from Week 8 forward. He's looking like an option in the red zone for Eli Manning, and the Giants do have a tough schedule. I think Boss is going to be needed as one of those short out options among receivers. Pick him up. And JerMichael Finley, another tight end here. Now, he missed 3 games with a knee injury, but when he came back, he had 7 receptions and 10 targets this week. That's very impressive for a guy who missed that much time, and I think there are 2 instances he'll be a factor. One is when his team is facing a terrible defense like Detroit's in Week 12. The second is if the Packers face a team with a vicious pass rush. That's because Aaron Rodgers is probably going to need a player like this as a safety valve. I think Finley's going to get more targets than you'd expect. Those are your pickups for Week 12. I'm Tristan Cockcroft, and that's your Fantasy 55.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. For more of the best that ESPN Radio has to offer, don't forget to listen online every day to shows like Mike and Mike in the Morning, The Herd, and The Scott Van Pelt Show, all available at ESPNRadio.com.